Love is in the air, everywhere I look around. Love is in the air, every sight and every sound. And I don't know if I'm being foolish, don't know if I'm being wise, but it's something that I must believe in. And it's there when I look in your eyes. Love is in the air, in the whisper of the tree. Love is in the air, in the thunder of the sea. And I don't know if I'm just dreaming, don't know if I feel safe, but it's something that I must believe in. And it's there when you call out my name. Love is in the air, in the rising of the sun. Love is in the air, when the day is nearly done. And I don't know if you're an illusion, don't know if I see it true, but you're something that I must believe in. And you're there when I reach out for you. Love is in the air, everywhere I look around. Love is in the air, every sight and every sound. And I don't know if I'm being foolish, don't know if I'm being wise, but it's something that I must believe in. And it's there when I look in your eyes.
That's me singing, not suffering from indigestion. Good evening, everybody. You're tuned to the Astrology Show Love Special here on the Barefoot Broadcast. And I could say you've just arrived in your helicopter or private jet, couldn't I? But in actual fact, you just finished putting the children to bed.
Yes.
What?
Most
tell social services, 11 o'clock.
Don't say that.
All right, okay. Blimmin' homeschooling.
Yeah, we keep slightly different hours to most people, don't we?
We seem to. And what an amazing and also slightly strange day it's been today. And we were up at, well, early doors, weren't we?
Yeah.
Sandpapery eye time.
Yes,
I like
very
to
much
call
so.
It. And we really enjoyed doing the Barefoot Broadcast remix this morning, getting that back on air at about 7 this morning. And the time flew by and we did about 40 minutes just hanging out and chatting. And it was lovely to have the company of Owen and Eric and other people who joined and other people listened subsequently. And
yeah.
For some people it wasn't a great time, but they can always listen in the podcast. But I think we'll do that again.
Yeah, I think so. Evelyn liked it, didn't she?
Yeah.
Although she said it was difficult to listen to while she was getting the kids ready.
True. Maybe we'll have to do it even earlier. And then there is Beverly Teasdale in Spain, I think. Beverly's in Spain. She said she enjoyed it immensely. And I think we might even have Owen with us again in this evening session. So it's been like a Barefoot Broadcast sandwich today, isn't it?
Yes.
But I've got to say, what a weird day we had as well. It's kind of strange, wasn't it? I mean, in between this morning and now, it's been quite a struggle to function.
Yes, it has. It's been a bit bonkers, hasn't
it? I thought they'd put something in the water or the air, and I could barely move at times. Fascinating, fascinating. So, it is the Love Special. John Paul Young, isn't it, who just sang there?
I have no idea. I love the song.
I love that song. And I remember, I'm always reminded by a day I spent at Alternatives in Piccadilly. Not one of their evening dues, but like an all-day workshop. I think Rupert Sheldrake spoke. That PR lady, Lynn, who became all spiritual, can't remember her second name. But it was a cracking lineup of people.
Yeah.
And William Bloom, excuse me, William, I don't know if I'm saying the name William Bloom made me cough. Just going to turn the mic down a minute. Right, we're back. Yeah, William Bloom was hosting it. He's like a granddaddy of the New Age movement, I think, in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And he put that tune on and he said, right, everyone's got to get up and dance now. I don't
and what
care.
Happened?
I don't. Everyone got up and danced.
Really?
As awkward as they felt. There they were dancing in the aisles and in the pews of St James's Church in Piccadilly.
Wow, how cool!
And he said, like, come on, get over yourselves, basically. Let's just dance, and it's all, you know, it's very much in the head here, listening to all these people, and we're going to dance every now and then during today. And I think it was a really good idea.
Yeah,
and that was a great.
So we're going to start tomorrow's show dancing.
Well, it doesn't work so well on the radio, does it?
No.
And nor does that Tibetan applause where you just wave your hand.
No.
So I think that was the first time I heard that, rather than lots of rapturous applause. You could just put your hand up and wave it like a glove puppet, which I believe is a form of Tibetan adulation.
Right.
And quite a good thing to do at a conference.
We saw that, didn't we?
Transition
conference.
Yeah, that's right. Kimberly says she's been a total zombie for 2 days. So we're lucky to have you here, I think, tonight, aren't we? So there must be something in the air, which obviously... Louisa may indicate.
Yeah, I'm just quickly just checking out people's messages.
All right.
For tonight, because we've got a few questions and we've got three readings as well.
Excellent stuff.
So,
well, it's all about love, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, everything is anyway, isn't it?
Yes, it is all about love.
But very specifically tonight, we are focusing on astrology and love. Combination. And so often, I mean, in your experience and my experience of your experience, people want to know about the big subjects in life from astrology,
yes.
Don't they? And love generally comes up.
It nearly always does.
Love, money and health.
Yeah.
Are the three things, aren't they? They're as certain as time, date and place of birth, which is what astrologers need.
Yeah.
To give you a bit of insight. Are there still spaces tonight for people?
No.
Or have you got a full house?
I have got a full house.
Right.
Just want to double check something because somebody has sent me their time, place and date of birth. And it conflicts with what I've already got for them.
Ooh, I say.
Because I recently had a look at their chart and I just want to double check. I'm just looking.
But you're looking at the right chart.
Yeah.
Well, it probably is best, isn't it?
Yeah, but that was the person I wanted to start with. Hang on, just 1 second.
Well, we can just hang out here and, I don't know, do a few yoga stretches while we're waiting. Kimberly, as our executive producer, perhaps. That's the dog barking next door. It's not one of the children. It's fine.
Right, I'm going to go with this date.
Are you? Well, because it intuitively feels right.
No, because they've also got their birthday on the on Facebook, and I'm assuming that they've put their birthday in wrong in the message to me.
Astrologer and super sleuth. But I think maybe they were trying to catch you out, possibly.
Maybe.
Just to see what happened.
But I'm just too damn
good. You got even 11 o'clock at night, having put the children to bed, you're on it.
I am on it.
Like a car bonnet, as Kimberly was saying.
Seriously?
Yeah. No, she's not likening you to a car bonnet. it's just what the kids say.
Yeah,
on it like a car bonnet.
Yeah, okay, right. So, we're starting off with love, and we've got three love-related questions from listeners who would like me to have a look at their chart. And I thought I'd start with this one because it kind of fits in with the flow of how we can talk about, you know, the possibilities for astrology and love and what we can tell, because this person is saying, apart from the 9 years when I was married between 94 and 2003, is it obvious in my chart why I've been essentially single? So what I'd like to do really, first of all, is look at what was going on very briefly between the times of 94 and 2003, because obviously this person is born in 1960. So they are what, 58? Mm. Yeah, definitely. They're 58. And so if they've essentially been in a relationship or sort of married for 9 years, that's a long, long time that they've spent being single. And I don't think astrology necessarily describes that someone has to be single or will be single. I don't think it's as prescriptive as that. I think there are sort of love waves and love spells, and we all have different coding in our charts. So, for instance, some people who tend to not have short I'm quite a good example, actually. I don't have short relationships. I tend to have long relationships. And I say that as if I've had lots. I've had two, one 11 years and the one that I'm in now with Carl, which is 7.5 years and going strong. In my coding, there are outer planets that show big, big changes in my life coming on. And the big changes are reflected in my life because the love takes over and it becomes my life, I guess. So we all have different coding. So I think it's always interesting to sort of crack the coding of everybody's charts, because not everyone has serious love. Some people have companionship and some people have a very sexual love. So I try to crack the coding of somebody's chart. So what I'm going to do is have a look at this person's chart from the perspective of what was going on let me just get these dates. Was it 94? Yeah. What was happening in 1994? Now, I don't know whether this happened in January 94, you know, when it was, but hopefully it should be something quite significant within the chart. So what I'm going to be looking at is looking at the astrology of this person from the perspective of where the planets were, the outer planets, normally the outer planets. So astrologers, if they're trying to predict a new spell of time or a new period that you're going through, like a new epoch, they would normally look for indications of long, slow development and change. And they are represented by the outer planets. So by the outer planets, what I mean is Uranus, Neptune and Pluto. Jupiter and Saturn move a little bit faster, but they are still quite slow. So I would probably also look at a Saturn transit, because Saturn also looks for extra responsibility. Another way an astrologer might look for a significant change occurring in somebody's life is looking at the position of the progressed moon, which describes an emotional new start. People tend to conceive children or have children or meet partners or change houses at times when the progressed moon goes from one sign to the other or one house to the other in comparison to your birth chart. So something significant like that would really give me a clue as what, you know. Does that make sense, Carl?
It does.
Because you're a non-astrologer, aren't you?
How dare you? You missed the how there. Right, you just got to dare you. Because I turned my microphone off so you could speak without me breathing in the background. But yes, I understand those pressure points. But yeah. I don't know if that's the right description.
No, pressure points is actually quite good.
Okay.
One thing I can see that was starting in 1994 for this person is that something quite significant is that we've got Neptune and Uranus over this person's Saturn. Now, Saturn in our life shows responsibility, and in fact, it's been my subject of this month on Patreon. So everything I've been doing has been about Saturn. So Saturn brings about responsibility, often brings about parenthood commitments and binds. So Saturn does often come up in marriages, and in fact, Saturn is indicated in both of my relationships. With having Uranus and Neptune on top of... Oh, I just squashed...
Did you squash a mosquito?
I just squashed it straight onto my leg. Perfectly. Sorry, everyone.
It's very good, interesting background information, isn't it? And scene setting.
So I'm doing scene setting and squashing.
She's a sleuth and an assassin as well as being an astrologer. Yeah.
I just don't like being bitten. I think that's fair enough. So you got the two outer planets right over your Saturn at the time, you know, at the time of this 94 to 2003. So it was just over your Saturn at the time of 94, leading into 94. So Neptune is about higher romance and how we delude ourselves. At its highest expression, it represents unconditional love. At its lowest expression, it shows where we get lost in ideas and lost in concepts and lost in romance and lost in sexuality. So it's a very delusional and projective type planet. So Neptune is often indicated in love situations because, I mean, love relationships are some of the biggest projections we do, aren't they? And Uranus shows the sudden start of something, you know. So there was this, you know, when Uranus and Neptune were lined up in Capricorn in 94, it was right over your Saturn, sort of triggering all that off. So that's the first thing that I noticed. And also the planet Saturn was also transiting, i.e. right over your Chiron. Now, Chiron is the planet to do with childhood hurts and childhood pains and the kind of soft spot that we all have, a bit like your Achilles heel. And so often when we find ourselves in relationships, our sore points get really dug into. Because we live closely with people and we interact closely with people when we're in a relationship. And so it does change us and it does open us up to childhood pain and those kind of discussions. And they can be quite healing. Having Saturn going over there shows that there was a responsibility going on to do with your childhood and possibly a time when you might have become a parent. So all that's going on. Also, I noticed that Chiron was also over your Pluto. So the planet, the wounded healer, was over the part of your of Pluto to do with transformations and moving on from a different state. So what I'm seeing in your chart, you know, it's actually starting just before 94. So the energies were coming in and getting you ready for big transformation, which I imagine it would have been very transforming at the time. So that was happening. Let me just check what was going on with your progressed moon. So I'm hoping this is interesting. This is sort of showing people the other side of astrology, I guess, and how astrologers super sleuth it and find out some of the most intrinsic things going on in your chart.
Well, we did have a comment from Kimberly. She heard you say that the love takes over and becomes my life. Love that. That's what I feel is happening for me now. Ironically, during my only solo phase for 30 years. Beautifully said, Louisa.
Oh, thank you very much, Kimberly. I will have a look at your chart with great pleasure very soon. Yes, so at the beginning of 94, this person's progressed moon literally just went into the sign of Libra, which often spells romance and partnership, because Libra is essentially the sign of other people. And it is to do with romance and diplomacy and flirtation and stuff. So, so the progressed moon was in a really sort of a place indicative of the start of a relationship, or at the very least, a new relationship to yourself in regards of relationships. And I'm just going to see where it was in response to 2003.
Could have an advert break here, couldn't we? Or
yeah.
Some celestial music.
What would you put
on? For these transitions.
What would you put on?
Stay tuned. Our astrologer is just changing her chart.
Hang on a sec. How has that happened? That doesn't make sense.
What's going through your mind at the moment?
Well, I can see that the Progressed Moon has changed signs and also changed houses at the time of 2003. So that does indicate... Oh, no, that's right. Sorry. I'm just a little bit addled because it's quite late.
With one thing and another.
Yeah, well, with one thing or another. So I can see at the time that your relationship started at nine, you know, in... 1994, that your Progressed Moon had just changed signs, and then again in 2003 it was changing signs again. So that indicates a change of pace. Now these changes of paces happen approximately every two and a half years when they change signs, but also when they change houses, that represents something big. And that can depend on the size of your houses and your birth chart. Some people have, in fact, this person has got quite large houses in certain areas and small houses in others. So the Progressed Moon can whiz through like the part of the home, but really dilly-dally in the part of relationships. I'm just going to look back at their birth chart just to reassure them, really, that there is nothing wrong with their chart that suggests why they would be single, because every type of person can find themselves in a relationship for all different reasons. You know, I was talking to Carl earlier about why people get married, and I was judging somebody and assuming that somebody...
Yes, she does that too, everybody.
I was assuming that someone's just that's just about to get married, someone that I know, is obviously getting married for reasons of true love. And we're saying to Carl, well, I hope they're really, really happy together because, you know, it's about true love. And Carl said to me, well, people might not marry for those.
They obviously love each other.
Yeah, thought, that's not necessarily true, is it?
No.
People marry for all sorts of reasons, don't they?
Yes, I was going to add, what we're looking for here, what you might be looking for here is just because somebody's with somebody doesn't indicate love.
Yeah.
And just because they're not with somebody doesn't indicate the absence of love.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
I think we have to take a sort of broad and deep view of this, don't we?
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, let's not beat around the bush. You know, people, I think questions tonight and often when we're talking about astrology and love are finding the right person, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's often what people are looking for.
In fact, that is one of the questions we've got tonight is, you know, how will I recognise the right person?
Yes. I've got to say as well, my eye was drawn to the near full moon through the pine trees out the window.
Wow,
there. Isn't that pretty special?
That's very special and a little bit eerie. It's kind of like the setting of a horror movie.
What? So if you hear something slam against the windows of our conservatory and a pair of us screaming...
And then it goes dead.
It's just the landlord.
But please call somebody to our address.
That is the beginning of a terrifying horror film.
Because I'd be...
you know the presenters are in Portugal somewhere.
But like if we're dead, our kids will be alive somewhere.
Oh, so, please, come
so,
on.
So like if that does happen, please, someone trace us via Facebook.
This is that fertile, over-fertile or overactive imagination of yours.
Yeah. Right,
sleuth, assassin and over-imaginer. And astrologer.
And there are astrological reasons for that too.
Of course there are.
Anyway, going back to this this person's beautiful chart, there's absolutely nothing to say why they would have been single for most of their life and only have, I say only, but have a 9-year relationship in that time span. One thing I've noticed about this person's chart, and I've spoken to them about it before, is they have this, it's quite unusual. They've got Mars and Venus are conjunct in the sign of Aquarius, and the Mars and Venus in the sign of Aquarius is actually on the ascendant. Now, Aquarians as a sign are notoriously independent and depersonalized. So they don't tend to take things too personally and tend to see everyone in quite a non-sexual way. It's a very balanced and equal sort of non-status led ascendant to have. You know, they're quite what's the word I'm looking for?
What, universal?
Yeah, universal. Mm. Universal brotherhood. That said, having Venus and Mars on the ascendant in any other sign would make them very, very interested in the opposite sex. I've noticed in people's charts where there is Moon and Venus tightly together, that this person codes love and sex very, very strongly.
Right. But, so when you say opposite sex, it's like they're very interested in the gender that they're interested in, necessarily, rather than the opposite.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm not pulling you up you shouldn't say it like that.
No,
but
no,
I just wondered technically whether you were saying, you know, whether they preferred people of the opposite gender.
No.
Their gender of choice.
Their gender of choice.
They're very interested in.
Yes, they're very interested in. Sorry. But like the addition of Mars plus Venus in one respect represents man plus woman, but I think it represents, you know, going on what Carl's saying, it represents you plus the other that you're interested in, the gender that you're interested in, or the non-gender that you're interested in. But having both of these planets in the sign of Aquarius takes some of the personalization out of that. So it gives you quite an unusual appetite for romance. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the way you express your love at all. It might confuse suitors. Having Venus and Mars in Aquarius right on your ascendant will give your love life a very Uranian theme, because Uranus is the ruler of Aquarius. So the position of Uranus, I think, would really, really show up at times when love might be just around the corner. So I would be looking for times when Uranus is in a really good position in comparison to Venus and Mars, or crossing over one of the houses or changing signs would indicate something new about to erupt. Now, Uranus has just changed signs in the last month. It's gone from the sign of Aries into sign of Taurus, which means that Uranus is going to be square your Mars and Venus. Not just yet, but it's leading up to it. And funnily enough, as it goes into a square, it will also cross over into your third house. So that represents something being kind of magicked together. Also, something else that's happening at the moment is you've got Pluto over your Saturn, which shows deep, deep personal transformation and feelings about how you can question your seriousness and question your effectiveness. And you've got Ceres over Pluto. You've got stuff going on, is what I would say. And Neptune, the other thing about this person is they have a Pisces moon and Pisces sun. So even though we've got the Aquarius sort of universal love thing going on, they've also got this big, big heart and soul wanting to connect. But you've got Neptune right over your moon at the moment, which for lots of people has been bringing in love and bringing in emotions. So I don't think your chart makes you unworthy of love. I just think your love profile is unique.
No chart could be that cruel, could it?
No,
I mean, I get what you're saying. You know, that there are indications, aren't there, and propensities and things, that a chart might propose. But to have it put as starkly as that, like a loveless chart, I just can't see how that would happen.
I don't think it exists. I've not seen a loveless chart, because we are creatures that connect naturally.
Yeah, and the astrology here is about how to make the most of circumstance, rather than to determine that you are a loveless individual.
Yeah, definitely.
In any way, because that couldn't be possible, I don't think.
Yeah, I think
it's almost like just nature doesn't allow that.
No, definitely not. And having Neptune over your moon, it has also been over your sun in the last 5 years. It's gone over your sun and then over your moon, so you're a new moon type of person, which means you're very good at instigating new things. But having Neptune, which is salubrious and spiritual and about delusions and projections and things like that, it could very well have knocked your confidence about who you were and your effectiveness in love and your worthiness in love, etc., which will probably have an effect on finding a mate. I think look out for someone that's unusual. Look out for someone that's got a massive heart. Look out for someone that you connect with as a brother. I really actually think that you can build a love on a friendship. I think it has to start in friendship first, and be prepared for something that springs out of nowhere. I think I'll leave it
there. Oh, my word.
I think I'll leave it there.
Watch out for anything that springs out of nowhere, whoever you are.
You know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
Anyway, I hope that's useful.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope it is. And I hope it's useful for just everyone listening.
Well, I think that's how you do this. You know, you would think, wouldn't you, that a radio show devoted to personal readings might be an odd concept. But I think the way you present it is such that there is a universal benefit to be picked up.
Thank you.
From the indications and insight that you're talking about.
Yeah, and one thing I haven't mentioned, I mean, you can look at compatibility in relationships. And that is something I do, but I only do it if I have the permission of, you know, both individuals.
Mm. And I just want to say, I feel sort of obliged or moved to say more about this, the difference between the kind of heart and mind here in this endeavour is, you know, when you said that you could do compatibility charts, it's possible mm-hmm. then that somebody, you know, you could do some forensic astrology and look for compatibility such that that person could search for the right sort of person.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, I would say that that is beginning to be a little bit too rational.
Yeah.
And too mind-based.
Mm-hmm.
And it cuts off something else that might happen.
Definitely.
Possibly, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying to people, don't do that. I mean, you've got to do what you've got to do. But it just seems really important to me that astrology is used in a way that is kind of helpful rather than over-rationalised or desperate. Because as soon as it starts getting desperate, that brings a different force into your life anyway, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That gives a different signal to the universe.
Definitely. Lord knows that one. I experienced that up close and personal when I was single for 6 years.
Right.
My desperation kept everyone at bay for sure. 11:03 p.m. Right, I'm just putting in the details.
Are we moving on to a different... So hopefully that was useful to you, person A.
The next person doesn't mind being named. So this is our good friend Kimberly that I'm having a look at now.
Tuned in. Owen's joined us now. Just wondering if he's just finished putting the animals to bed on the Kinta.
Oh, wow.
Well, I'm guessing that.
We've spent our day with him kind of on and off,
yes,
haven't we? That's really quite sweet.
It's been great. Yeah, thank you, Owen, for joining us this morning and tonight.
Right. So, just heard a little click there. That was Carl having a little cough.
I don't know if it's worth like turning the mic off because it makes that really loud click, doesn't it?
No, I think you should just
cough into the mic.
Yeah,
and have
I
done
mean
with
we're
it.
Just real people, aren't we? So
and proving it with phlegm.
Mm.
Nice.
So I've got somebody else. So I've got Kimberly wondering if she'll ever really want to be in a partnership again. Or ever have the deep soul partnership that she truly wants. She feels that she's getting less patient with the male ego and no longer wanting to settle for anything less than sacred union with a conscious man. Well, I hear you there. And I think those kinds of unions sometimes do take a little bit longer to come up. Because obviously if you were happy to settle with any Tom, Dick and Harry that fitted the bill... you know, fitted a slightly easier to fill bill. that sounds even worse, doesn't it? Fill bill.
It sounds like a Tarantino movie. Yes. It's the love story he has to go at called Fill Bill.
I guess, you know, when you're looking for something special, I think you do have to hold out for it because otherwise, there will be people coming along. Who might not fit that bill that you're hoping for. I can't stop saying bill. Maybe look out for something.
Maybe
look out for a bill.
William.
Do you know a William or a bill?
Yeah. Well, that'd be so freaky, wouldn't it?
That would be incredible.
Down the news agents tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
I'm like, oh, I'm pleased to meet you. My name's William. Oh, my God.
And all of a sudden we hear this angelic music in the background. So anyway, let's have a look. So here we've got the chart of Kimberly, who believes in a true union, who wants to find somebody who is going to know her, a true conscious soul level.
And can I say, good on you and how brilliant that is.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to sound patronising or anything, and I'm sure you know that that's the case, Kimberly, but, you know, to be a woman and be standing for that in your life, I think is an amazing thing.
Yeah.
And not an easy thing.
No.
But I think it's incredible. And so all power to you for taking that stance, that power position in life.
Yeah.
Or in relation to life.
Well, what I've done is I've added in some love asteroids, because I do like to add in a few asteroids. As standard, I have Juno. I always look at Ceres, Pallas Athena and Vesta. They give us a bit more of a femininity in the charts, and they describe different aspects of how we care and nurture and love people. But I've also added in some love asteroids, some like specific ones. So I've added in the asteroid Amor, which is to do with finding true love, you know, the idea of true love. And Kimberly's Amor is in the second house, conjunct to Jupiter, showing that, of course, Kimberly stands for true love, because for her, true love is an expansive, hopeful, optimistic thing that fills her entire being. And it's in the second house to do with her own personal values. So her personal values is about love. And
anything less than that just won't do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've also looked up the asteroid Aphrodite, which is basically the other version of Venus. So sometimes if you can't see your answers just by looking at Venus, Aphrodite is a sort of equal, but often sort of forgotten about. Then there's Psyche. Now, Psyche is an interesting one because it shows a soul connection, you know, the soul connection that we're waiting for. And it also shows our undoing a little bit of how love can take us to the edge and almost drive us a bit mad, but from it you can develop and transform. And
isn't that part of the bargain?
I think so. Yeah. Well, I think it is, if you want that kind of love.
Mm.
I think some relationships just don't touch it, if that makes sense. You mm-hmm. know, some people just go only so deep and never really get to the psychological stuff. So Psyche is an interesting one, and I've also brought up Casanova. You know, just to see about your own motivations and whether, you know, you're happy to talk a good talk, or whether you're really wanting to you know, have that relationship.
I was going to say pork a good pork instead of talk a good talk. Is that what you're getting at?
Well, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. We're not judgmental here, but it brings you different consequences and results.
Definitely. And Eros also is very, very similar to Casanova. Eros shows where we're infatuated, and looking at the balance of those also gives us an idea as to where the emphasis is.
Language, Kimberly. She's saying, oh, bums, can't I have a soul connection and easy? In actual fact,
yes,
I mean,
can.
Of course you can.
Of course you can.
That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, I was saying earlier on that it seems to be part of the bargain that, you know, great love brings great disturbance. And I guess great disturbance can be handled greatly.
Yeah,
and
great
with ease, can't it?
I think great disturbance can lead to ease.
Yes,
yeah. For sure. And I think it's quite normal that when relationships first get together, after the inevitable, like, honeymoon period, which might last
strawberry
2 days
faces.
Or 2 weeks or 2 months or even 2 years. After that, you know, when you get that norming, it's a bit like the forming, storming, norming and performing, you know, in coaching. Often people go straight to the dark side, don't they? As they
power
start.
Struggle.
Yeah, it's power struggle time, isn't it?
Hmm.
And I think that is essential.
Well, you definitely did that to me.
God, you totally put me through it as well. Right. So I've given you a description of what I'm looking at. Now I'm going to say how it applies to Kimberly's chart. Now, other indications that Kimberly's looking for an absolute, you know, soul connection is that she's got Neptune right on her ascendant, which shows that she's a soulful, spiritual, etherical person that feels things and needs to have that feeling almost come advance of the relationship. She almost needs to feel the person coming into her sphere before she's even become. Out, so that's one thing to watch for, but I know that you're a bit of a goddess and quite aware of when you're projecting, when you're not. So that's just something to just be aware of. But your psyche, to do with love and unraveling and deep soul connection, is square to your Neptune, which shows that you're not afraid to do that. So even though you said, oh, can't I have it deep and easy, or whatever it was, can't I have a soul connection and easy, I don't think you actually want that, because you don't actually fully get the trust in the process. I think it gets easier once you've confronted the pain in both of your souls, if that makes sense. Because once you've been brave enough to do that together, then you have the ease and the trust, because that trust can't be taken away, I don't think, you know, when it's gone that deep. So that's just something that I see. Also, your psyche is square Saturn as well, which shows, again, a real sense of responsibility for soul development within a relationship. Your amour is just very optimistic and beautiful. And it is in dynamic squares. So these indications show that you are likely to change greatly through the love romances that you have, or the long relationships that you have. And that doesn't necessarily suggest ease straight away. Sorry about that. I'm not saying it's not possible, because your Eros is really, really nicely aspected with your Venus, which shows always a very good sexual connection, always. And also, like our first caller reading I did, your Mars and Venus are also conjoined. You know, they are also together, showing a deep need for a union. And yours are in the seventh house, the sign of relationships. Yours are also in an air sign. So you've both got a Venus-Mars connection in an air sign, in either the first or seventh houses, which are angular and important houses. So you've both got, you know, I always find themes between the charts I look at, don't I, Carl? I said there would be a theme tonight.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So both you
I think it's the first time you've actually said that, though.
What's that?
Like, I bet there's a theme. Because normally it's been, oh, there's been a theme.
Yeah.
And you took the risk of saying, I bet there is tonight. And,
oh, there always and there is. Go. Always, always, always. So your Mars and Eros, which are very, very similar in energy, to do with infatuation and strong imagery and a need to get sexual, to express your love, is really, really strong and well aspected. It's great. And they all aspect to Aphrodite, and also to Chiron, showing that you can work through pain through your relationships, and also to Casanova, and also to Mercury. So when you do meet someone that you connect with, you're really able to flirt and be very, very direct. And also, you know, talk the talk. And I don't want to say pork the pork that Carl said. But
yeah, I'm so sorry about that. But it just rhymed, and I couldn't waste it.
So I think when
come on, we're all grown up.
Okay,
today. I
okay.
Think we know what you're
when the
about.
Person comes along, you're in no doubt as to who it is, and neither is he. And your behaviours show that. So that's all really, really positive. So when to answer your, you know, one part of your question, let me just go back to it quickly.
Sounds great. Sounds like sort of, you know,
wondering if I'll ever really want to be in a partnership again, or have the deep soul partnership I truly want. Of course you will. That's my answer. You will definitely want that, for sure. I'm absolutely sure. I can see you might be getting less patient, and I absolutely agree. You should not want to settle for anything less, because anything less would not be a love relationship. It would be a friendship. You know, it just wouldn't be right for you.
Mm.
I could see that a sexual intimacy could be a bit of fun. Not suggesting that it would be fun necessarily, but your Venus and Mars and Aphrodite and Eros energies are so well aspected. It shows, you know, a natural expression of sexuality. So, you know, why not? You know, if you're grown ups and stuff. However, seeing the need for a soul connection, I think it's almost worth waiting for somebody who is absolutely ready to give to you. Will it happen again? I'm absolutely certain of it. I know you're already aware that Uranus is in a loose conjunction with your sun, and it's just going to get stronger and stronger over the next few years. That will certainly shake things up, seeing as your sun is in the fifth house of romance. Uranus has been in your fifth house for about a year and a half, which would have brought in some shocking changes romantically to you. But Uranus is going to be in your fifth house of, you know, romance and sex and lovemaking, etc., and new beginnings for at least another 6 years. So that's a great placement. You've got Chiron only a few degrees away from the part of your home, which suggests that there will be changes in your home initiated at least in the next few years. I would say that could be happening as early as next spring, that there'll be changes at home or a need for you to change your relationship to your home. And I think home changes are often indicated because of a love relationship, unless you're actually planning on moving. So, you know, let me know. I mean, you might well be moving. But there will be sort of some kind of change coming into your home. Also, Saturn is going over your Jupiter at the moment. You know, there's some good indications. Anyway, I hope that's helpful. So hold out for that love. I really think that's
Kimberly's saying it. I've had it and been battered. So I'm thinking she's just going to hold out for the pure.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. She's got such a beautiful energy. It would be sad for it to be tarnished by a thoughtless person, you know, taking advantage or believing that they, you know, really want to, you know, I mean, I don't mean to tar all men with the same brush or women with the same brush, but I know I've met lots of Casanova types, you know, who have said the right thing and spoken in loving terms, and that is such a lubricant, or it was such a lubricant to me.
But Grandma was right, wasn't she?
Bloody
They're
hell, was she?
Only after one thing. Dirty devils.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would hate... And I don't think men that say that are necessarily just wanting that.
That's interesting.
I think a lot of men really do believe things, believe in their... In what they're saying, and then it gets so deep so quickly, especially if you're a soulful type like Kimberly, and obviously me, and you're a soulful type, and so when the seriousness of it hits, I think some people go, oh, that's too much for me, it's more than I can handle, and they scarper.
And so, I think at the moment, in what we might describe as the crisis of masculinity, I think it is, although it looks really bad, you know, Me Too and just sort of terrible things coming to light, it's also, I think, getting some fellas to raise their game who are horrified themselves and want to do things differently, do being a man differently. So I think that's a great time, as horrible as some things that are sort of emerging at the moment are. It does put an emphasis on men to raise their game, and I think a growing number are rising to that. Or ones that are just like didn't know what to do or say, or just had some sort of inkling, and the role models aren't there. The you know the patterns aren't there. It's the you know the kind of old stuff, alpha male, macho man stuff that's been around as the strongest role models for men. Is it really in a crisis? And I think it's okay now. So actually, we could do something a bit different to this. And I think I'm pretty keen and certain that we are moving into that. And it's allowing men to be very different and much better, in inverted commas.
Yeah, I agree.
Or more loving, I suppose.
I would agree.
And
I
less mean, hung up and less, you know, less behaving to just really poor stereotypes and old-fashioned ways of being.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, where are the really good examples of relationships or spiritual conscious relationships that people listening to this show are going to want to emulate? I certainly didn't come across any of those in my life.
It's a barren landscape for
well,
role models.
I mean, you can only really, you know, like initially, you only really love to the level that you've been taught to. And you might have instincts of wanting more, but if you don't have the skills of how those relationships work, because they haven't been demonstrated, you know,
I think in dark times, we have myth, don't we?
Yeah.
And legend and fairy tales. And people would say, well, they're just fairy tales, but God, we have to have those if things get so dark and awkward. That's what they're for.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, that was a wistful, yeah, wasn't it, coming from me. And that is because I'm looking at another chart, and this is a chart I've never seen before. And this is, am I allowed to say the name of the person?
Let's not, just in case, because okay. If you do, you can't really take that back.
Okay, so this is a gentleman that I'm looking at the chart, whose birthday is on the 4th of July. I won't give the year away. Born in Huddersfield. Now, this is a really nice chart. Funnily enough, with Casanova right on the ascendant. So
now, what does that mean?
What
are you going to make that
in
mean?
In the sign of Sagittarius. Now, Sagittarians are quite good at being a bit like Peter Pan characters with great fleet of foot. I say that laughing because, you know, I'm a Sagittarius myself, but a Sagittarius ascendant is, it gives somebody a wanderlust and a need to move and a need to feel freedom. And especially this person's Casanova that is in the very, very last degree of Sagittarius conjunct the ascendant, which makes him, and it's really well placed, I have to say. It links into his Venus and also to Juno, which I haven't really mentioned yet, but Juno is to do with finding unconditional love. This person absolutely believes in unconditional love, higher love. And his Juno is almost exactly trine his Casanova. So when he does talk about love and he is able to talk about love very, very easily and fluently with somebody that he is intimate with. It absolutely comes, but it comes from the heart. Really, really does. However, I would imagine that would have taken quite some time to get used to, because I imagine this would have been somebody who did get carried away with his emotions quite easily in his younger days. And is, you know, like growing into the responsibility of your words and your emotions when it gets too heavy too quickly. It takes time, doesn't it? And courage.
Yeah, we often don't have the communication skills, do we?
Or
the resilience in our younger lives.
Yeah, but this is somebody who's definitely, definitely very, very romantic, and somebody who has Venus, conjunct Juno in the 8th house and sign of Leo. Now, the way Leos express their love is also very innocent and playful, and that love changes everything. You've got your Leo in Venus as well. So, you know, it's a warm, spontaneous love that changes everything. In the 8th house, it's about transformation. So you really do want to be transformed by your love. And I imagine very much like Kimberly, whose chart I just read, I imagine you are looking for something highly spiritual and highly liberating. So through your energetics, through your consciousness, that you reach some new level. One of the reasons why I say that with quite a lot of certainty is because both your Venus, your Juno, and your Ascendant and your Casanova are also in alignment in a trine with your Eros, sexuality and stuff, but also your North Node, which is to do with karmic patterns. So it is like it's your life purpose to find this person, and that's the strongest pattern. And I'm just, you know, Carl is not an astrologer, but would you say that
I'm beginning to get offended about the times you say that.
Yeah, sorry, I've said that twice.
Some of this is rubbing off on me, go on.
Yeah, okay. Would you say that blue triangle is one of the most dominant patterns in that?
Yes, I would. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, it's almost perfectly an equilateral triangle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just to add in a little bit more info, your psyche is conjunct Pluto and also Uranus, and that shows that you also have this idea of being changed and transformed through love, and changed really dramatically. And also your Amor and Chiron are together, showing that you have the need for a romantic love that helps to heal the past. So you are definitely somebody who wants to fall in love, for sure. Now, I'm imagining that one of the reasons why you want a reading is to find out when this person might come into your life, or what kind of person you need to look out for. I would...
You're changing charts.
I've just added in the... see all those planets around the outside?
Oh, yeah.
That shows the current position of the planets.
Yeah.
And I'm just showing Carl how astrologers look at transiting planets. So I've added in a few extra things. And what I can see, first off, which... is worth noticing. Yeah, you're going through something at the moment called the Chiron return, which can be really unpleasant. You're pretty much through it, but there would have been some trauma leading up to the, you know, within the last year. When Chiron goes back to its birthplace, it's roughly around the time of your 51st birthday, you know, anything from like 49 to 51. But when Chiron goes back to that first place, any childhood hurts that you've not got over get reawakened, and they tend to play out. So for instance, if you've got something going on about not being loved enough, that will reflect in your life, and you'll be openly demonstrated to while you're not, you know, lovable enough. If your childhood pain is something different, that will also be reflected to you. So the Chiron return is about letting go of the stuff that has kept you back, and that has been repeating throughout your life. But you tend to get a massive repeat of anything that hasn't cleared. Good thing is Chiron is moving away from there. It is going to go back over your Chiron over the next few months, which shows that any decisions might be not rescinded, but you might just doubt what's real and what's not. You might have a chance to
mosquito alert. Sorry,
I missed it.
She's very focused until there's a mosquito in the room.
Yeah. I almost had it in sight. So you have a chance to sort of go back over the stuff that has caused you pain and clear it. And from that, things will get much, much easier. Like Kimberly, you also have Uranus about to go over your the part of your home, which shows that something could imminently change the way that you live. Now, in your case, Uranus going over there is quite dynamic. It shows massive change quite quickly to do with your home and how you live. It also shows greater freedom at home, but it just does show a sudden change, like something new coming into your life and something quite shocking and energizing. I will also say you have had Saturn going over your ascendant. Saturn was right over your ascendant around Christmas last year, just before Christmas, around the 15th of December. I know this because your ascendant is exactly where my sun is, so I can tell you that like with pinpoint accuracy. When Saturn goes over your ascendant or your sun, it absolutely floors you and makes you feel very much out of resources, and it just feels like everything's against you and stacked up. But Saturn's moving away from there and is helping you progress. Now, Pluto is just moving out of your first house and into your second house. So that's another indication that something could be around the corner for you. And I'm just going to, lastly, just check the position of your progressed moon. So to answer what I think your questions probably are, I think you do need to, a bit like Kimberly, hold out for somebody really worthy of you. and not to compromise your beautiful vision, because you've obviously got a very soulful connection in your life, and I think it's important to maintain that. Because
so you're right about the theme then tonight, and this is about
definitely
possibly people. It might appear, mightn't it, that the search is out there, but are you saying possibly that actually the awareness could be of what's in here and how precious it is and how great it is?
Definitely.
And to have that shine and be a beacon such that the other is drawn towards it.
Definitely.
So stop searching out there and be aware of your value and power, and that may well draw the person that you're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I couldn't have said it any better myself. And I like the fact that I said it, because now it sounds like that is what I was going to say. But so yeah. I'm dovetailing on the brilliance of my hubby there. So thank you, Carl. Right, couple of things about your progress chart. Your son has just changed signs in your progress chart, showing that some major changes just occurred. And Ceres has just changed signs as well in your chart. And Ceres is conjunct your son in your progress chart, showing that something very deep and instinctual to do with love has changed and put you on a new path. Now, your son has just gone into the sign of Virgo, which is to do with fertility, it's to do with the earth, it's to do with nature, it's to do with being organized and creating a new system. That's all great. It's heralding in a new way of being, and I think that's just good. Your progressed moon is currently in the sign of Aries. It's about to change houses in 5 months' time. So I think Uranus is going over the part of your home in about 5 to 8 months' time, and your progress moon is changing signs in 5 months' time. That's gonna show show up in your life as a change, as something significant happening, and a different tempo to your life. So that could really be an indication of something good and passionate and loving coming in. Just as Carl is starting a new song, is that right?
I thought I'd muted it.
I heard it in my ears. Does that mean they heard it in theirs?
I think they can do name that tune. And it was what I was preparing as a gift to our listeners tonight. So I'm so sorry I was premature there.
That's okay.
Whilst we've been talking about love, sex and relationships.
Yeah, and what I just also need to say, so your progress moon is about to change houses in 5 months' time, and then 6.5 months' time it's going to change signs. So there is definite change coming. You've also got your progressed amour, the ascendant, asteroid right on your ascendant as well. So things will work out.
Progressed amour sounds fantastic.
Progressed amour, yes. Yeah. Okay. That sounds like a great pop band name, doesn't it?
Yes. Well,
progressed amour.
Love asteroids and the progressed amour.
Progressed amour.
Mm.
You could almost blend them together, so it just sounds like one word. Anyway, I think that's my three readings done.
Well, you've done ever so well tonight.
Have I got time to answer one of Anna's questions?
Yeah, sure. And we will play out. I think I think Kimberly's fond of soul music and probably knows the Earth, Wind and Fire back catalogue well, and I'm sure Owen, who's listening as well, does too. So you'll have known what that tune was that I want to close the show with, because I think it's absolutely beautiful. And I think there is something of a reminder there of self-worth and self-love and knowing how amazing you are, which was the, I was going to say it's a theme tonight, but it's just what I was saying earlier. It's not a theme at all. It was just my little input into the show tonight.
Yeah.
So what was Anna asking?
I'm trying to find it. Where has it gone?
I think she's talking about the effect of the heavenly bodies, wasn't she?
Yeah. Well, she was sort of asking earlier. Let me just bring it up on my
phone. So funny. I've got a few messages.
Oh, great!
To read while you're looking at Anna's question there. Let's have a look. Back to the messages. take your eye off it for a moment. I can't read all of your message, Kimberly, who says, yes, well said, Carl. I've been getting super hot with my boundaries and values lately without even trying. Fascinated to see the outcomes of that. I think there's a bit, you say a bit more, but I can't click that open. And Owen, can you be very correct? Correct or you're not correct, but he's correct. That's the way of the world with Earth, Wind and Fire. So well spotted, sir, in like 3 or 4 seconds or whatever it was. And he says he's thanking you for some reason.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. And thank you both so much. More love shows, please.
Oh, lovely. Who said that?
That's Sir Kimberly.
Oh, I've enjoyed it. Yeah. It's been great. Okay, right, I found one of Anna's questions. So how do and what do the planets do apart from being in our birth charts? How do they channel energies to us? And does it work in the same way for all star signs, i.e. if one person feels extra creative than usual, does it happen to everyone of that sign or only one person? Okay, trying to think how to describe this, Anna. I want you to imagine that on the time, place and date of your birth, there's like this mystical camera in the sky that takes a snapshot of where all the planets were at the time of your birth. Because a birth chart is what an astrologer uses, and it's like a map of your emotions and behaviours and personality. And the birth chart is essentially a circle. So if you imagine a clock in front of you with 12 different areas within that clock, you might have your sun at 5 o'clock, you might have your moon at 4 o'clock and Venus at 2. You might also have another planet in with Venus. And all of these planets will have different relationships to each other, sort of based on their angles. I don't know if you're interested in shapes or not really. I guess people
don't, in geometry.
Yeah, geometry. Not many people, you know, put their hands up and say, "Oh yes,
well,
I'm into train spotting, and yes. I love a shape." But I mean, I'm fascinated by shapes and the patterns that come up. And so, like when I look at a birth chart, shapes emerge between the patterns. So, for instance, if you had your sun at 12 o'clock and your moon at 4 o'clock, that would create part of a triangle. It would create a 120 degree angle, I think, if I've got that right. Yeah. And if you had something at 12 o'clock and something at 3 o'clock, it would create a 90 degree angle, i.e. part of a square. And so everyone has these birth charts that look like maps with planets in different patterns. Now, all Cancerians, or you're a Leo, aren't you? So all Leos will have their sun in the sign of Leo, but there's 30 degrees of Leo and 30 degrees of Cancer and 30 degrees of every star sign. And the sun moves approximately a degree every day. So not all Leos have their sun in the same place. And not all Leos will have the exact cosmic coding, i.e. the exact picture that you have. Your birth chart is exactly and completely unique to you. Even twins born at the same time and place as each other will be born seconds apart, and that changes their birth chart ever so slightly. So everybody's chart is unique. Now, to answer your question, how do the planets affect some people more than others? A lot of that depends on, I want you to imagine that we've got a minute hand going around this clock now. And this minute hand is, say, the planet Pluto, or it could be the planet Saturn. And both of these planets create massive amounts of change for people. Now, if the minute hand of Pluto, if Pluto's position just happens to line up with where your sun is, then you are likely to go through change. But in its position at, say, 5 past midnight or whatever, it might not be touching anybody else's sun. It might just be touching your sun and a few other people's suns. So when a planet goes over a particular part of your map where you have a planet, then there's a kind of there's an influence that comes in creating change for you. Now, what often happens when you go through significant change is you'll have several different planets over several key areas in your chart. And it won't be like that forever, because the planets are always moving, which I guess represents how we evolve. Now, I don't know if that's an easy or simplified image, but I know you're quite a visual person, so that's why I was trying to describe it for you. But I hope that's helped. I don't know what else to say about that.
The cosmic camera in the sky.
Yeah.
We should call this show that.
The cosmic
Louisa
camera.
Louisa Sanamunson, the cosmic camera in the sky. Anyway. Or the cosmic clock face as well.
Anyway, I think that's probably, it's time for you to put in that lovely bit of music and maybe we say goodnight.
I think so. Thank you so much, guys,
for tuning in.
It's been great. And the time has flown, as it always seems to. This is another
really
cosmic
does.
Clock here.
Yeah.
Yeah, cheers, Owen. Thank you, Kimberly. One love is what Owen's saying there. And that's how he greeted us this morning. And that's how we're signing off tonight. So
wow.
One love, absolutely. Take care, everybody. And let's enjoy this now.
won't you hear me now? Won't you hear me now? Won't you hear me now? Yeah, yeah, yeah.